Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Volvo. Experience the wonder of summer, have a month's payment on Volvo, and spend your summer doing the things that matter to you. Plus, get up to 5 years full coverage, including wear and tear. Just go to volvocars.com/US.
This podcast contains explicit language.
Okay, so just give me a second. I will just sort of say hello, and that'll be the beginning.
Just you, Zach. It's not Jason, too. It's just you.
Yeah, unfortunately, Jason's out sick, so...
Sorry. Okay. He does that every time he's supposed to interview me, I noticed.
So that happened. This week, Ohio Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown, the only lawmaker who can do a passable imitation of Tom Waits, joins us to discuss austerity in Greece and banking regulations at home. Also, we ask him if he's going to run for president, because that's what you do in the media. You ask people if they want to be president. Meanwhile, we've got hot news of a Planned Parenthood sting video this week. And like most sting videos, you know, like the one for Fortress Around Your Heart, it turned out to be a crap pile of deception and obfuscation. We'll help you not be conned, like we always do. Finally, we take one of our dips into the 2016 presidential race. And it's a contest that's coming to be defined by the way out-of-control money has completely bollocks the Republican National Committee's hopes of having an orderly primary season that doesn't cause a lot of damage to their eventual nominee. I'm Jason Linkins, here with Huffington Post reporters Laura Bassett, Zach Carter, and Arthur Delaney. Here's what happened first. I'm Jason Linkins, editor of Eat the Press at the Huffington Post. This is something that happened, the podcast and the house pet. And the dish detergent. And joining me is our Shadrach lineup of Arthur Delaney, who's right here.
Hi, thank you.
And Zach Carter.
How are you guys doing?
I was sick a little bit of the week.
Me too.
Not me, fuck you guys.
And there's something kind of like about a summer cold that feels like a big betrayal. Like I'm not supposed to get sick in the summer.
Yeah,
like I'm supposed to fall down and hurt myself in the summer, but not get sick.
If you're foolish enough to have a favorable opinion of summer, I would understand that, but it's the worst season.
If you guys get me sick during this podcast, I will hunt you down and sneeze in your soup.
Well, bad news. The three of us are all actually, after the podcast, going to that ball pit at the National Billy Museum. We've slotted out a time for just the three of us to swim in those balls.
And I'm not sick now, but now that you said that sort of jerky thing, I hope you do get a little sick. Mild.
Guys, this is not the right attitude.
You know,
to a ball pit later.
So I get really paranoid when I have like friends coming in town that I'm going to get sick and ruin their stay. And I have a friend coming in town this weekend, so I really don't want to get sick.
All right, I take it back.
And I have
this
idea that if I talk about it, then it won't happen. Like I'll like de-jinx it, you know? Like I'll kill it.
If you steal your constitution against getting sick.
Yeah.
All right. This conversation is really...
It's not... No, this is a good conversation.
No. I need to talk about Donald Trump.
Oh, God. Why? Why? Okay, yeah. I mean, we're going to talk about...
I need to talk about something topical.
It's pretty amazing. Right,
so I need a political conversation.
We're going to start by dipping a rare toe into 2016, only because we haven't talked about 2016 in a while. And the eternal and endless primary season, which is one of the things that makes America a festering garbage swamp.
Donald Trump rules.
All right,
FEC.
I really want to punch you right now.
All the candidates had to file their paperwork about how much money they raised this week.
Yes.
And Donald Trump's his campaign was like, the FEC paperwork is not built for a man of Mr. Trump's wealth.
Donald Trump is running. Donald Trump is definitely running the right said Fred of campaigns
right now. They said Donald Trump's net worth is $10 billion.
Which is probably false.
And they wrote out the numbers in all capital letters.
They did?
Yeah. Donald Trump is awesome. Mm. And the whole conceit that Donald Trump is beneath us or, you know, not a good candidate or not someone we should pay attention to, I think is beginning to crumble. And
I will be the last man on that hill.
All right. Alamo. So, Donald Trump.
The Alamo was fought in defense of slavery. Let's just throw that out there. We shouldn't use it.
Wait, did you just call it the Alamo? Did you just put the emphasis on the wrong syllable?
Donald
Alamo.
Trump.
It's the Alamo.
Stop trying to get off Trump.
Well,
it's
I'm
Trump.
Just trying to get back to America.
So here's the thing that I like about the 2016 field is that Ryan Priebus and everybody else from, like, the 2012 Republican autopsy report.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They have got to be pulling their freaking hair out, right? So
that
you start with Donald Trump saying horribly racist things about immigrants. Everybody basically being in the Republican Party being like, yeah, I kind of agree with him. I think there was a poll that we had that showed, like, 7% of Republicans disagree with Trump's policies.
John McCain and Rick Perry both said no to the agreeing with him part, but go on.
But only 7% of Republicans in this recent poll, one of our post pollster people, Ariel, only 7% of people disagreed with his policies.
Their base is quite nativist.
So that's an issue for the Republican Party. That's something that you know, they're going to have to grapple with.
And it was something that autopsy, Ryan Priebus and the team that put it together said over and over again, what we need to do is like reach out to Latino voters.
Yeah, that's been a farce since the
of
moment
course
it was
it's been
published.
A
quick recap of how they're handling Trump. Ted Cruz just came out and said he's bold and brash. He's great. Rick Santorum,
like, man, I wish I could do that.
Rick Santorum, who is currently a loser and won't be on stage at the first debate next month, he said all he could muster was all that glitters is not gold. That's what he said about Donald Trump.
He's so emo, that guy.
The one who's really trashing Trump is Lindsey Graham, and he came out and said,
a penny
Donald Trump
penny
sucks. Donald Trump is destroying our party.
He's not wrong.
He might be right about that, and it's incredible. And Donald Trump will actually be on stage with these guys during
we'll
a televised debate.
You know, I'll give him props for jumping in the race, because I don't credit him with much courage.
How are they going to get him off the stage? They made these elaborate rules with what they thought was the ultimate goal of preventing a certain number of people.
Yes.
But they didn't make a rule to prevent this one
flaming
jackass.
They
and
tried.
It's hilarious.
They tried. They tried by saying, okay, if you're waiting to file your FEC thing, if you're taking an extension, you can't be in the debate. But he fucked everybody and said, okay, I'll file my $10
million
thing.
$10 billion.
$10 billion, yeah. It's probably closer to what I said than what he said, but that's just me.
I would be psyched if I had $10 million. I would be really psyched. I would not run for president. I would be on the beach.
$5
million.
We need to collectively, people just need to relax their sphincters and just watch Donald Trump do his thing and just enjoy it.
I'll say this. If you're someone who's in the debate and you're not Donald Trump, you're itching to get a piece of that guy, because this is where people who are actual professionals, who are run by real consultants, are going to shine. They're going to take him apart with a spoon.
No, I read.
He'll just say, no, fuck you, you're
a loser.
They're
going to put him.
It'll be amazing.
You're very bad. Major dope.
Let's recall that, like, when he came to the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the one that Seth Meyers hosted, he could not take the jokes that were being launched at him from.
You're right. He was turning purple.
See, the only thing thinner than his hair is his skin.
Whoa!
And they're gonna rip him. It's gonna be great. I'm sorry. I'm gonna be in Europe, and I'm gonna miss it. I'm actually not.
Classic Lincoln.
Now, reportedly,
Jeb
Bush's team is actually quite worried, because Jeb Bush, being the the front runner besides Trump, has a lot to fear.
Genital worriers. That's all they do is worry about every.
They
fucking
were born
day.
Worrying.
Yeah, they were born worrying.
Because Trump will say things like, "You're very bad."
Yes.
And Jeb Bush will be like, "Oh fuck, I am very bad. He got me."
Yeah, yeah. My boy Tim, who runs his comms, has been on Twitter. I found him very easy to rile and very easy to worry.
Well, listen.
Like, kind of not his – that's not his brand. His brand is unflappable. He's been a little flappable, and I think that's just like the necessity for being part of Jeb Bush's team. You have to be a little bit worried all the time about everything.
Well, we're far enough out from the actual election and the primary election for Republicans. The stakes are low enough, and the process of these 15 people staging these – debutante balls over the beginnings of their campaigns has been so ridiculous that I'm just going to enjoy Donald Trump bringing the self-parody level of the entire enterprise to 11. I think it's
I
great.
Will be in Europe, but that's okay. Let's just briefly touch on the reason why everything's going to shit on Reince Priebus, because you talked about how, like, when the RNC autopsy is written, one of the other things I talked about was, like, we got to have a short primary season that's not protracted, doesn't allow flavors of the week to jump up, become front runners, doesn't have 20-some-odd debates, something that's relatively put to bed early. They didn't get it. And the reason they didn't get it is because super PACs have unleashed their fucking hell on the world. And, like, to the people who thought, oh, this unlimited dark money would be awesome, then guess what? It's not, because it's completely taken power away from central party elites like the RNC, and it's loosed this nonsense on the world that they can't control. And I don't know if, like, this will be the year it lapses into outright scandal, but we're going to see through this primary process that now has, like, 17 people in it.
This is the future.
This is, yeah.
And Donald Trump,
a billionaire, buys himself a pet. The pet goes to the debates, stays in the race forever, even though he doesn't have a shot at winning.
We're in the future right now, and Donald Trump is the futuristic Biff from the Back to the Future movies.
Yes.
Only on an even bigger scale, and it's awesome entertainment.
Who would call him Future Biff? Call him Future Biff. I wanted to...
Donald Trump's comeback for you, Arthur, you know what it's going to be? Dummy.
Yeah.
You're a dummy.
You're a dummy. Loser.
It's awesome.
Very bad food restaurant.
He's an asshole. He's welcome to come on our podcast anytime. We'll just call him an asshole.
Didn't
the whole
he insult
time.
You on Twitter once? Is
yeah,
that, you just have an axe to grind because of that.
No. I'm glad. I'm grateful.
Yeah, wait, is
I'm
this
grateful
personal,
he used
Jason?
My name. No, it's personal? Not personal. As a matter of fact, Donald Trump and I had a very cordial relationship for a period of time. He actually called me up one time because I wrote a story about, like, how Politico said he was preparing on spending, like, a ridiculous amount of money in the primary. And I was like, use perspective. This amount of money they're citing, that's, like, half of what, like, John McCain spent on his entire campaign. And, like, he called me up through his dude – Cohen, his Michael Cohen, his aide de camp, who's straight out of Central Casting, by the way. Reporters after this campaign are going to love telling stories about talking to Michael Cohen. I don't even know if his fucking first name right, but it's Cohen. I think it's Michael. Anyway, he set up a call, and, like, Trump talked to me. He was just like, yeah, I just wanted you to know that was a good story you wrote. And I was like, cool, I know that. Of course it's a good story. I wouldn't have allowed it to be published if it wasn't fucking A+.
You wouldn't.
Like, everything
else. You had a telephonic conversation.
Yes, I did, over at the old office.
Yeah.
And he went on and on. He trashed Roger Stone on the phone call with me. He suspected Roger Stone was the dude who, like, gave that weird story to all these people. And the funniest part of it was that at one point I was just, because I had him on the phone, I was just like, I mean, tell me, are you going to run for president? And he was like, all right, off the record, I think people are going to be very surprised. And I was like, you don't need to go off the record if you're just going to describe a hypothetical emotional state.
Off the record, Jason, I think tomorrow
I gotta put this
it's going to be another day.
I got to put this on background, but I think I'm going to do a thing and people are going to react to it.
But whatever. The
I was like,
Treasury
okay,
Department
I'll keep
that does
that
to me all the time.
Sources close to Trump say that people might be surprised.
You call the Obama administration and ask them to comment on some policy that you know is their policy, and they'll say, off the record, I can't really discuss that. And you're like, you don't have to go off the record to say you can't discuss that. You just
right.
say, I'm not going to discuss that.
Right. I just, in those circumstances, you cancel out off the record and you say they wouldn't discuss it.
I guess technically, I just committed an act of journalistic integrity because I just disclosed that someone off the record had told me they would not talk to me. But I don't think the journalism cops are going to come out.
I think I'm coming down off my Trump sugar high.
Normally.
So here's the other thing. Reince Priebus have to deal with all of these candidates having to deal with, you know, Donald Trump being a horrible racist in front of everybody. The other thing that they have to deal with is this hoax Planned Parenthood video, which all of a sudden all of these Republican candidates had to come out and say, yes, we really want to talk about abortion, and abortion is a really bad thing, and we are anti-abortion. And you know that Reince Priebus does not want the party to be going hard at immigration and abortion right out of the gate. That's not how they want to win this election.
Right.
And so he's just got to be pulling his hair out.
We're going to talk more about that video with Laura Bassett coming up soon. But I also wanted to just briefly mention Scott Walker's in the race. And Scott Walker wants to sample your urine.
Yeah, he's such a...
You're in trouble.
He's such a tall glass of water.
He is a tall glass of water.
Or pee.
Yeah.
You're going to need a tall glass of water, though, under a Scott Walker regime.
So he's one of these weird governors who want to drug test people who receive food stamps.
He's not...
Despite the fact that, like, when we've seen this in practice... and we
He's not one of them. He is the absolute kingpin
of
drug testing.
What about Rick Scott?
Rick Scott has faded into drug test obscurity. He's
wow.
floated to the bottom of the bowl.
His urine is kind of clear. It's not that electric, you know,
if you're a governor, your state can impose drug tests on people in certain programs, mainly welfare or temporary assistance for needy families. No. Scott Walker wants the big one, food stamps, one of the top three federal safety net programs in this country. And it's clear that federal law doesn't allow it. So Scott Walker, they changed the law. They had a new law that says everyone on food stamps in Wisconsin is actually on welfare. And then they sued the Obama administration in order to have a court settle the matter. So he waited until he had this budget, this law in hand, before he announced his presidential candidacy. So he's making people pee in cups to the presidential level, which is exciting.
Can we talk about how cruel that is?
It's not just cruel, it's stupid. It's because in Florida, what ended up happening is that they spent more money on drug tests than they saved
by kicking people off of these programs.
Yeah.
And more money still fighting over it in federal
which
court.
Which is really weird. It's like, people should get off drugs.
The lack of evidence?
They still need to...
Here's the thing. Even if they are on drugs, we are talking in this case about food stamps.
Right.
People have got to eat. The level of cruelty when you're saying, I want to take food away from hungry people because they are drug addicts. That is like the mentality of the guy at the Republican debates in 2012. Remember when they asked like Ron Paul, like, what would you do to people who don't have health, who like didn't get health insurance, who get sick? And that guy in the audience is like, let him die.
Right. Yeah.
And they all cheer. That's the let him die caucus. Scott Walker is leading the let him die
it's
caucus.
It's really weird because it doesn't really help drug addiction to starve a person to death.
Well, what they would do is they would subject you to in the Wisconsin a piss test regime. You take the piss test, and if you fail it, you actually don't get kicked off, but you do have to enroll in a rehab program of some kind and job training. If you don't do that, then you get kicked off. So in a way, it's a little more humane than what we've seen before, but Scott Walker is being more aggressive than like 10 Rick Scotts. So I find that exciting, and I look forward to Donald Trump debating Scott Walker on this.
I'm going to make him shit in a box.
That's not classy.
That's what he'll do. Yeah. He's not a classy man.
Not major quality, right?
In Wisconsin, don't most of the time when you pee just like straight cheese.
Oh, ooh. Man.
So it's I went to a wedding in Wisconsin last year. I stopped at one of these cheese curd places on the side of the road, a creamery.
Cheese curds are dope, yeah.
Woo, man. But I was like, wow, if I lived in this place, I would die young.
When I was in Wisconsin, I ate a pizza that had pasta on top of the pizza.
When I was in Wisconsin, I was a little kid, but I was still drunk, like you have to be in Wisconsin when it's cold out. Drunk on ice. That's Wisconsin. All right. We will be right back. Coming up next, we have an interview with – who do we have an interview with?
Sherrod Brown.
There you go, Sherrod Brown.
Yeah, he's a senator from Ohio.
Yeah, cool. We're going to talk to Sherrod Brown about stuff. We'll be right back. This podcast is sponsored by Volvo. It's time to experience the wonder of summer. Leave early, get close, wander more, stargaze, do it all. Have a month's payment on Volvo and spend your summer doing the things that matter to you. Plus, get up to 5 years full coverage, including wear and tear. The Wonder of Summer event from Volvo. Go to volvocars.com/US or test drive a Volvo at your local dealer. Hey there, listener of this podcast. I've got a quick little thing I'd love to chat with you about. Are you a regular So That Happened listener? Well, let us know. Send me an electronic communication with your electronic communicating devices at sothathappened@huffingtonpost.com. Tell us what you think of the show, what we're messing up, and who you'd like to hear more from or more about. Okay, back to the program.
Well, Senator, thanks for joining us.
Sure. Look forward to it.
Okay, I want to start here on Greece, because there's some pretty big news this week in Greece. You guys had a hearing in the Senate Banking Committee on the situation there. What do you make of what's happened over the past week?
I was sort of excited and optimistic when the Greek people made the decision they did. I'm less optimistic now that the austerity policies look like they may continue almost as severely as they did before. There seems to be sort of an abdication of responsibility from the European community, from the German government, and from the banks when it looks a little bit like what we saw here a number of years ago, where banks lend money to people that are higher risk than they probably should, and then the banks expect to be made whole. And that's obviously that's too simplistic to label to describe all of the Greece situation that way, but that's a part of it. And unfortunately, the German financial community, and I mean the European financial community and the German government especially, and the French a bit too much have acquiesced. I think have put Germany or put Greece in a situation which has made people poorer and not really remedied the whole issue when you do austerity the way they do.
So that's the part that I find particularly troubling, is that the money that goes to Greece, a lot of it, if not the vast majority of it, ended up going to German and also French banks. And nobody asked, you know, the French bankers to get rid of vacation homes. And yet the requirements on Greece to be able to have the money so they can send to banks have been particularly harsh. But do you think the United States should have played a stronger role in the negotiations? I mean, it looks like over the past few weeks that basically Treasury sort of sat this one out.
Well, I don't know what role the U.S. could have played. I know that Treasury monitor it and advise from time to time, but it's mostly a European issue. I would think the U.S. has kind of learned, certainly the U.S. public has learned from what happened 6 or 7 years ago and how that's played out in some sense again in Greece. I guess I'm not going to second guess the Treasury Department here that we could have been more engaged. I think that there are so many other issues around the world. But I'm disappointed how it's played out, and I'm disappointed especially in the European Central Bank and the European bankers sort of writ large.
Do you think there are lessons for policymakers in the United States from this mess?
Well, I think there's lessons. Now that we've seen the movie twice leading up to our financial crisis where banks were pretty much made whole, and what's happened in Europe, and you know, this whole view of austerity, which is so discredited. I mean, it's amazing to me.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
It's a little bit like trade policy, where we keep doing the same thing over and over, and the outcomes are not good for working-class Americans and low-income Americans, or working-class Greeks or low-income Greeks. We keep doing this, showing this movie over and over, where you pass another trade agreement, or you do another, impose more austerity on people that were not the cause of so many of these problems. And it's unfortunate. I mean, clearly there is responsibility on the part of the Greeks, too, in the way they've run their government and the way they've organized their society. But when, in the end, those who make the loans and made them not always with great responsibility, if you will, don't seem to pay much of a price.
I mean, one more question on this. I mean, what do you think this means for the European project more generally? I mean, this was supposed to be something that made the prospect of international conflict between big nations like Germany and France remote, that it would foster cooperation. And you've basically seen over the past couple of weeks the government of Germany just really, really laying into the government of Greece. Do you think that the prospects for a peaceful, harmonious community in Europe have been damaged by this?
Oh, I think it's been damaged. I think it's, when the big guys have the ability, the Germans and secondarily the French have the ability to beat up on the smaller, poorer nation as they pull them into the European Union, willingly, of course. But the Greeks, I think the lesson goes out, don't do what Greece did. The problem is the lesson also is no restraint on risk-taking by big banks. I mean, it really is the same story over and over, that those who have been responsible for a number of the decline in GDP in these communities, countries, or that they've been responsible in large part for their, that they've taken no responsibility sort of for their profligate lending practices, and we have again rewarded them by, in that sense, bailing the banks out. So I guess we've learned both lessons, but unfortunately the lesson that has dominated here is the banks, again, haven't taken responsibility for their profligacy. Understanding you teach a lesson to the little guys about their profligacy.
So in the United States here, we're coming up on 5 years since the passage of Dodd-Frank, the big Wall Street overhaul that was supposed to clean up the financial system after the mess in 2008. How has the financial system changed over the past few years? I mean, have the markets adjusted appropriately? Have policymakers responded appropriately to that crisis?
Well, I think that the things are better. I don't agree with people that say they aren't better, but I also, of course, don't think they're good enough. I think we have not ended too big to fail. I'm concerned about bank concentration. The largest six banks have. Their combined assets are 60%+ of GDP. On the other hand, I like how the Office of Comptroller of the Currency has imposed better risk management on the banks in terms of risk officers being upgraded in the right place in these banks, so that there is a little more caution in their risk taking. I like that we've had better capital standards. The surcharge that the Fed and others have done on the banks, on the big banks, is important. I want to see more tiered sort of CCAR stress testing on the large banks. So in that way, it's good. But in many ways, it's still too big to fail, too big to manage, too big to regulate. And Congress still has work to do.
What about DOJ there? I mean, because you all the stuff you just listed there is complex technical stuff about risk management for banking. But I've always thought that on some level, that stuff is useful. But it also helps if you just actually enforce the law. And we haven't seen any big name bankers from American banks go to jail. Even when DOJ has prosecuted banks themselves, the corporate entities, no individuals have ended up with any significant penalties. We see banks, J.P. Morgan Chase, for instance, is issuing settlement after settlement after settlement with different regulators. Are we ever going to get to a place where banks are fully taking responsibility if we don't bring the criminal justice system into this?
No, I think a lot of people have wondered why banks have, by and large, shown little contrition, and executives have never really gone to jail. Never gone to jail during this, and I think that disturbs a lot of people in the American public. I think that when you can just pay a fine that you, by and large, charge off to stockholders, because it really isn't a personal fine for many of these men and women, mostly men, in the banking system, it does lead to skepticism about having any confidence in the financial system. So the reaction of Wall Street to presidential criticism has been pretty amazing. When their feelings seem to get hurt when the president has been critical of banker greed. But it's still the most important thing that we've got these big settlements. They are not unimportant, but the fact that nobody's gone to jail over this is is, I think, disheartening to many and should be disheartening to many. So we still have a lot to do on the DOJ side, on the regulatory side, on the bank concentration, and a whole lot of other things.
So last question here. The GOP presidential field just gets bigger and bigger. There are clowns like Donald Trump in it, but we only have like four Democrats running for president. David Brooks, of all people, has said that he thinks you'd be a great candidate. When are you announcing?
I'm only announcing that I love the job I'm doing and want to do nothing else professionally in my life except stay in the Senate. So, but you quote David Brooks, that makes me want to do it. So, I appreciate that.
All right. Well, we'll have him on next week and see what he thinks. Well, thanks for joining us, Senator.
Thanks, Ed. Glad to see you, buddy.
Okay, we're back, and now we're back with Zach Carter, who's still here.
Hi, everybody.
We're joined by Huffington Post reporter and English footballer Laura Bassett.
Yes, hello.
Hello. It's welcome back. Thank you for allowing us to exploit your name in common with another woman for us to generate revenue for our podcast.
It's the best day of my life, the worst day of hers.
The worst day of hers, best day of yours.
Oh, God.
We did okay.
That was really the best day of your life?
No, probably not.
Always good to be able to coin misfortune and, like, put it in the bank.
I did always want to be on SportsCenter, so that was pretty special.
That was cool, yeah. That was dope.
That was my photograph, too, so I felt pretty good about that.
True.
I hit the big time. High five. Look how famous we are. Jason,
great.
Aren't you envious?
I hope the podcast picked up that high five.
A little bit. That, the podcast heard. The podcast hears all high fives that happened in this room.
Okay, so Laura, you had a pretty eventful week on your beat. Tell us about the really interesting and honest piece of journalism that was released to the media.
Yes. So there is a very mysterious group called the Center for Medical Progress, which sounds like a very serious name, but they have scrubbed their website of any kind of history, so nobody really knows who they are, who runs them, or who funds them. And they released a video that claims to show Planned Parenthood, a doctor at Planned Parenthood selling fetal body parts. That's what they say the video shows. The video is heavily edited. I've watched the full unedited version. What it actually shows is a doctor at Planned Parenthood talking about how patients who come in for abortions can choose to donate the fetal tissue for medical research, stem cell research, et cetera. And the clinic sometimes can get reimbursed for the cost of donating, like the cost of transporting this fetal tissue, which is, she said, a figure of like $30 to $100 per specimen, which is does not sound like selling organs.
What a lot of money.
Dun, dun.
Right.
Ooh, breaking it in, $100 for, oh, wow, that's the huge profit center.
Right. So this video is like, you know, she's going through all this trouble to preserve the liver of this baby and then selling it for $30.
Which, she was also drinking wine, that callous, unfeeling abortionist. Right.
You know, I understand. It's kind of funny to me because, like, I understand there's probably a bioethical debate of the use of fetal tissue.
Not much.
But there's probably an extant one, and I'll respect the fact that there's a bioethical argument there. But it's awfully weird to be hearing about a commodity that has obvious value where it's, like, terrible that someone might make a profit from it.
I mean, look, what's kind of funny is that there is, like, a right wing, a wing of, like, conservatism that thinks there should be a free, unregulated market in the sale of body parts. That is, like, a thing that like, hardline libertarians have talked about a lot, and they think that
being on a waiting list for tissue.
Right. If somebody wants to sell you their kidney for 10 grand or whatever, you should
do it. Why not? Yeah.
And so here you have a wing of the conservative movement saying there should
capitalism is bad.
Not just capitalism is bad, but
let's just be clear that this is not sale. There's no sale happening.
Yeah,
of course.
This is not even what happened. And which
is too bad. I was going to get in the fetal part business.
Like, these people posed as a fake biotech research company to Planned Parenthood.
Yes.
And then tell the public that they are actually organ traffickers. Or lead the public to believe that they are, in fact, organ traffickers. The type of people where, like, you wake up in a bathtub with a terrible headache pain in your side and your kidney is gone.
I'll be honest with you. I'm not against reporters tricking the people they're trying to get information from. I'm against reporters tricking the people they're giving information to.
It seems like a much bigger problem.
And that's the big problem with this, because it's...
Did she even agree to I mean, in the video, they say that she's agreeing to sell the stuff. Does she even do that?
No, it's all hypothetical. She thinks she's talking to some kind of stem cell research tissue firm, and she's talking all in hypothetical about how much they would want to be reimbursed per specimen. She talks about how she would go about doing the abortion in that case so that she can preserve the things that the woman wants to donate. But she doesn't actually make a deal.
Right, because you would need the mother to agree to donate the tissue.
Right. And I think what the anti-abortion folks are really zoning in on is the fact that she talks about how the lawyers, Planned Parenthood lawyers, are careful about this and don't want it to be perceived as Planned Parenthood selling organs and whatnot. And they sort of see this as like a gotcha moment. Like, look, the lawyers are concerned. But
right.
The lawyers are concerned because Planned Parenthood, I think, is – well, Planned Parenthood says lawyers are concerned because they're really trying to follow the law and do this legally and follow the rules. And it is legal to donate fetal tissue. It is not legal to sell fetal parts. And so it's not absurd that lawyers would come in and make sure everything is kosher.
What I find it funny is that, like, there's been sort of like three sort of like media camps on this issue. There's one media camp that – points out that the video is a lie and that the people behind it are liars and that Planned Parenthood is doing nothing above board. Nothing that's not above board. Am I using above board correctly?
Yes, you're boarding yourself.
Okay. Then there's obviously an industry of right-wing media who typically do their best to con their listeners, who are out there conning their listeners. And then there's a number of, like, ostensibly neutral news organizations that are just pretending to be completely innocent on this, be like, well, we don't know if it's a lie or not. We don't want to take sides. We think the liars have a point of view in this debate. We think that, like, the truth and something that's false, that's a debate we got to have. And I don't know. I hope the truth wins, because I'm definitely, you know, I feel like, and like, they don't understand. Like, I think Politico wrote something that was like, oh, who knows what's going on? The Washington Post is like, oh, who knows what's going on?
No, I don't think that's true. I don't think it's fair. The Washington Post says pretty clearly in, like, the second paragraph, the video does not show.
Okay.
Agreeing to traffic
I take it back.
I think theirs is pretty
responsible. But to be innocent on this is to be like, look at the scales of, like, false and true, and be like, I'm going to put my thumb hard down on the false side. Hard down.
I mean, even calling it a lie is kind of ridiculous. This is not an undercover sting. This is basically a hoax. I mean,
yeah,
this is
exactly.
Purporting to.
And I just want to point out that Congress is actually yesterday launched an investigation, official investigation into Planned Parenthood, the Energy and Commerce Committee, based on this video. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just taxpayer-funded confirmation
bias. Yeah, it's
bias.
Got a lot of traction. I mean, people are really taking it seriously.
And yeah. It's all over single Republican in the 2016 contest jumped in to say, like, this is terrible and I hate Planned Parenthood. And
serious people aren't taking it seriously, but clowns are. People with an axe to grind and people who want to mint that coin for people's outrage.
But you also see people in the conservative movement who, like, people who I, like, may disagree with on a lot of issues, but respect, who are just really into, like, abortion politics, who I think are kind of embarrassing themselves by latching on to this. I mean, it's interesting. The reason that the Republican Party presidential candidates have to go nuts on this stuff is because the Republican base really has is eager to believe that everybody at Planned Parenthood is constantly breaking the law and wants to traffic in organs.
Yeah, 2 years ago, it was the last sting video was trying to prove that Planned Parenthood aids sex traffickers, and they had a guy come in posed as a pimp and try to catch Planned Parenthood, like, not asking the age of the girl that needed care or whatever. And then Congress launched an investigation based on that, and it found nothing. Like, these sting videos happen every year. Congress always launches an investigation. And now the group Live Action that always puts out the sting videos, people know that they've completely lost credibility because none of their investigations ever turn into anything or prove to be true. So now they've had to do this under the guise of this new organization called Center for Medical Progress. Like, right. I just think it says a lot that they couldn't do it under Live Action anymore. They had to use a different name because people don't trust them anymore.
It's funny. There's the Manhattan Institute, which is a conservative think tank, has their own little thing called the Center for Medical Progress. It's like a division of the Manhattan Institute. And it is a conservative.
Oh, right.
Thing.
And they had to disavow this.
Yeah. And like, that's a place where they have, like, oh, I think not particularly convincing economic studies showing that Obamacare is terrible and stuff. But they're like, whoa, 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 whoa. We are not those people. Let's be clear.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, when that part of the conservative intelligentsia has got to be like, okay, hang on. Let's be clear.
This is not us.
We are not associated with these guys. There is a shortage of human tissue for scientific research. That is actually a thing.
Right.
And the thing is, especially with fetal tissue, I mean, that's how researchers learn what, you know, fetal anomalies, like what's going on with them, how to fix them. I mean, it saves lives. It's red meat to a certain base to talk about, oh, and then they rip the arm off. And then
poor choice of words, Laura.
Sorry. Excuse the expression. That was not, you know, whatever. But I'm just saying, you know, this happens all the time, and it's why babies' lives are saved in the womb a lot. When there's some kind of brain thing that we don't understand, it turns out there was tissue that they were able to study, and now we have some kind of medical breakthrough that just saved your child. And so maybe it's, like, uncomfortable to talk about exactly how they get that tissue for research.
Well, I mean, let's face it. The issue here is never about taking care of a child. It's about punishing women for having recreational sex. Like, that's really what's at bottom here. It's why, oh, life begins at conception. Cool. Well, here's some contraceptives. Oh, no, life begins now before conception. Like, keep moving the goalposts, man. And what always makes me just, like, baffled is that, as a society, we bend over backwards to make sure that men of any age can have all the recreational sex they want, provided it's not with another man. And I'm just like, and then we spend an equal amount of time punishing the women for having recreational sex. And it's like, who do you expect these men to have fucking recreational sex with? I mean, are they going to stick their dick in a fucking light socket, a fucking knot in a board? I mean, it's so weird and perverse that it's like, oh, well, we got to get fucking Viagra into the fucking body of every 75-year-old motherfucker with, you know, I don't know what fucking dust is left in his epididymis, but God, the world needs to have it. The world needs to have that desiccated baby batter all over the fucking place. And we punish the women who are willing to be like, I will be the sex partner of these men. It's like crazy to me. It's perverse.
I mean, look, I'm sympathetic to people who hear the description of the abortion process who feel like uncomfortable, who are grossed out by it. It's gross. It is. It's gross. But lots of things are gross. Autopsies are gross. Heart transplants are gross. You know,
a lot of medical.
Sure. Lima beans are gross.
Yeah. I mean, lots of stuff is gross. And that's unfortunately, there's gross stuff in the universe. And some of that is called science. And it is helpful to humanity.
Yes.
All right. Well. There we go.
There we go.
Laura, thanks for joining us. We'll have you back at a time when we don't always have to talk about fetal parts.
Thank you for having me.
Here's some Twitter shit. Arthur Delaney, who's no longer here to cry about how much he wants people to follow him on Twitter and that he will, you know, stand in traffic if you don't follow him. His Twitter handle is at Arthur Delaney HP.
Delaney, D-E-L-A-N-E-Y.
Right. So if you're having trouble following him because you've been spelling Delaney wrong, now you know.
It's with the E, not without. It's not the way Samuel R. Delaney spells his name.
No, follow Arthur Delaney on Twitter so that he can be happy. Don't you want Arthur to be happy? I mean, you probably hate the rest of us, but surely you want Arthur to be happy. Okay, Laura Bassett, her Twitter handle is at L.E. Bassett, two S's, two T's, 1A, 1E, 1B.
Right. Absolutely, yes.
Follow Laura Bassett for fun and frivolity.
How many followers do you have, Laura? Like twice as many as I do, right?
Like 9,000 something.
Yeah, it's like exactly twice.
Let's get Laura over 10,000, man.
Yeah, let's hit that 10K mark.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
How do I get as many followers as you, Laura? I only have like 4,700.
You gotta tweet about the issues.
And then you get us. Yeah, you gotta tweet about the issues. And then
I just like make jokes about Dinosaur Jr. and shit.
Right, and then probably spend like most of your time on the internet.
It helps
having,
to be on SportsCenter. It helps to have the same name as a famous athlete.
And Zach D. Carter.
But Zach like Zach, not Zach like
D.
Yeah.
As in devolution, Carter.
K is for the KKK. H is for houses and happiness.
Right, so you probably confused people on the issue, so let me just reiterate. That Zach's Twitter handle is Zach Carter, Z-A-C-H-D-C-A-R-T-E-R.
Yep. D and is I'm, dog.
And I'm at Deceiver, D-C-E-I-V-E-R.
Because you deceive people, you liar.
Yep, I'm a liar. I'm a liar.
Which I'll brings rip us your mind full out. Circle on today's topic.
Right. I feel like we should do a spoken word version of Henry Rollins songs. And then sing Henry Rollins' spoken word.
Wow, I did not see the Henry Rollins connection there, but now that you have made it. One thing that people should all watch on the internet is a video of Henry Rollins. It's called Henry Rollins Trap Music. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen.
All right, so go watch that. Don't say we've never done anything for you. All right, later on, people.
Peace.
Yeah, have a good weekend and stuff.
I'll see you already.
So that's what happened this week. This podcast was produced and edited by Ibrahim Balki, with technical direction from Brad Shannon, and assistance from Christine Canetta and Adriana Ucero. I'm Jason Linkins. This week we were joined by Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown and HuffPost reporters Laura Bassett, Zach Carter, and Arthur Delaney. This podcast was sponsored by Volvo. Check out volvocars.com/US to see what Volvo can do for you. So That Happened is available on iTunes. Check us out at itunes.com/panoply or by searching for So That Happened on iTunes or Stitcher. While you're at it, check out the Huffington Post whole family of podcasts. Subscribe and tell your friends. If there's something you'd like to hear us talk about, please send an email to sothathappened@huffingtonpost.com. As always, we thank you very much for listening. We miss you already.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.